May it please the court, I'm Lee Davis. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant here, Christopher Smith. As the court probably recalls, this is a criminal appeal coming out of the 371st District Court here in this building. The one issue before the court here today is whether the trial court erred by failing to order a competency trial based on Mr. Smith's bizarre behavior and something of a history there in the trial court, both before the trial commenced and then particularly once the trial commenced there. There are really, I think, a handful of key facts here that I would ask the court to bear in mind as we kind of move through the argument here. There's a number of different things that transpired, but early on, the doctor, Dr. Womack, a psychologist who evaluated Mr. Smith, made a report to the trial court that said a couple of key things, that he needs pictures to help him understand the trial court process, and that he could learn it. The language there is very key. It's a prospective. He could learn what is going on here, which would at least impliedly suggest he doesn't know at that point. There were a couple of subsequent tests performed. Dr. Womack felt that there was a good chance that Mr. Smith tanked it on the first three, but he gave him two more tests, and there was not a question on those tests about the performance, or at least if Dr. Womack had that question, he didn't raise that or mention it. But on those two tests, the results were still at the lower limits of the extremely low range, similar to those with moderate or mild retardation. And then on the other test, he had, it was a mathematical test that apparently had the ability to do double-digit addition and subtraction, something that, you know, we learn in elementary school these days. And then finally, the morning of the trial on the merits, voir dire had occurred the previous day, but the morning of the trial on the merits, Mr. Smith smuggled a piece of a razor blade in his mouth to the courtroom and apparently was going to use that to cut his trial counsel. And this is what prompted the trial court to summon Dr. Womack back for some additional evaluation of the situation. Dr. Womack did return, met with Mr. Smith for 34 minutes, and came out and expressed to the trial court that he felt that trial counsel, defense counsel, was at a substantial risk of serious injury from Mr. Smith. And of course, I think the thing, part and parcel of that, is that this was behavior that the trial court felt warranted some further explanation, and because of that, summoned Dr. Womack back. Now, this is, I think, in some ways kind of an unusual area of the law, because under Chapter 46B, it's a little different than what we're accustomed to in terms of requiring error preservation. Of course, most of the time, if there's no objection, nothing brought to the trial court's attention, it's waived. This is a little bit different in that the attorneys have the ability to request this, but there's also a duty on the trial court to take action if there is some indication of a problem here. Absolutely, Your Honor. And the informal inquiry is the first step. And where we're contending the trial court erred is that there's arguably, I think the state counted perhaps five informal inquiries, depending on what you look at. And our contention is that these all were screaming help.
And
well, and that's true. And so That's literally correct. I mischaracterized that to an extent there. But then that raises the question of why was this determination being made? The informal inquiry, as I understand it, is simply to determine whether there is some evidence to raise that doubt, not to make the determination. And that appears to be, at least in a couple of the cases, what has happened. We go from, okay, maybe there's a problem, to not really an informal inquiry, but a determination. And the magistrate judge leaps to that, as does, I think, the trial judge the morning of this razor blade incident. So that's the crux of our argument here is that, look, these things, these issues here that are brought up and are clearly before the court raise that bona fide doubt here. And it's not, it's kind of like a summary judgment in a sense, because there doesn't have to be enough evidence to get to that competency finding. It's a question of, is there enough here to suggest that there's a problem? Smoke. No, Your Honor, I would definitely not characterize our argument as going that far. Certainly, as the court probably knows from its own experience, many criminal defendants can be challenging to deal with, both from the defense perspective, the prosecution perspective, and the trial court perspective. But this is one of those isolated cases that is, we would submit to the court, totally over the top. That truly bizarre behavior. A razor blade secreted in the mouth is, that's pretty beyond normal, we would contend. Even a very upset or angry individual is probably not going to go to that length. The risk of severe and perhaps even permanent harm to that individual just by doing that is obviously very, very significant. So, you know, that's, I guess, just the final episode here, but we have, you know, preceding it, a number of different events. The magistrate judge hearing where Mr. Smith contends that his trial lawyer is evil and basically refuses to make eye contact with the magistrate judge. Oh, it very well could, but that's really not the, I guess the question here is there enough to get us over that hump of, do we need to really make that formal inquiry, or can we say, no, this is just shenanigans? And here we have, you know, from essentially the beginning of the case, all the way through the morning of trial, we have concerns. You know, this all kicked off when the initial trial lawyer, and the record is not clear on why he was replaced, but Dr. Womack came on board because the initial trial lawyer had those concerns about Mr. Smith. And that led to that initial, I don't think he's competent, but I can't say for sure, I've got to do some more testing. And then it progresses, but you know, we know that Dr. Womack only did approximately half the things that he said, you know, that he really needed to do here to be able to make that determination. But then some of those things are concerning. You know, for example, Dr. Womack did talk to Mr. Smith's sister, who later testified at trial, that they don't think he can live by himself. They have a niece living with him. They have concerns about him making his own lunch and remembering to do that and eat his lunch. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that the 46B factors tell you, you look at here. So, you know, that's something that is significant, at least in the eyes of this code section, that appeared early in the case. So I guess I would suggest to the court this is not that last-ditch effort by the defendant wanting to put off that day of reckoning, but this is a problem that existed and manifested itself for virtually the life of the case in the trial court. And this... No, but we don't have to know that at that point. If true.
No one ever told the judge that the defendant was innocent. In fact, said the opposite. So the judge is just supposed to, you know, order this hearing despite the fact that that all experts have said that he's competent?
Under this chapter and the way it's written, yes. When there is... It's in 46B, and let me, I believe it's 005, but I don't want to, yes ma'am, it's 46B 005, and specifically C3. But the court, and under sub A, the court shall order the examination. To determine whether it's incompetent, and then you move on to C, which is the trial is not required. If the court doesn't believe it's necessary, but the case law on this. Does put that duty out there, and that's what I was alluding to earlier. When this is the unusual kind of scenario where the error is not waived with no objection. It's from that standpoint unusual, and I can understand that the court would have some concern that the attorney who took this to trial did not stand up and say, Judge, I need to hear it, and we can speculate on why that was the case. There are probably several good reasons there, but we cannot escape the pattern of bizarre behavior and what appear to be mental issues. At one point, Dr. Womack submits a report that says this is consistent with mild or moderate retardation. Moderate retardation is sufficient to trip the, hearing. So there is right there fairly early a question about what do we have and what should we do with this. And like I said, I would submit to the court that this is that case that is so far out there that it's not that defendant who's just acting up, having a problem. It's a history of things, of very, very serious things, and for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So anyway, I do have to say that the state is correct on the remedy point. I did make an error in the brief there. If the court does find that there was error here, then the appropriate remedy is to abate and remand for that retrospective determination. If the trial court determines that it's possible to determine it, we have the trial on that issue with the report back to this court. If not, then the trial court would report back that at this point it's impossible, and we would have to have a new trial. If there are no questions, I will sit down and yield the few seconds back that I have.
You got it exactly correct, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I'm going to be brief. As the court knows, this case falls under an abuse of discretion standard, and We're simply here to determine if either of the judges, the magistrate judge or the trial judge, acted arbitrarily, unreasonably, or without guiding principles, and the simple answer there is no, they did not. The appellant says so in his brief. If you look at page 22, it says there is certainly sufficient evidence for a competency finding. I think a reasonable rewording would be that the judges did not act arbitrarily, unreasonably, or without guiding principles, because there is certainly enough evidence for them to have found this appellant competent. If the court doesn't accept that, then the state's position is that the appellant has not presented any evidence to suggest incompetence. The evidence that has been brought forward does not meet the bona fide doubt standard, and the, for lack of a better term, so-called evidence that appellant has brought forward was brought forward without any authority to support it. He gave no authority stating that these types of actions are evidence of incompetence. And in the state's brief, there are citations to cases that say that these sorts of actions, maybe not directly on point, but these sorts of actions that the appellant took are specifically not evidence of incompetence, uncooperative behavior. There were citations to suicidal behavior. And I'm not even saying that this appellant was suicidal. I think the cutting incident, Dr. Womack reported that they were superficial wounds. And again, I believe that this was done in an effort to subvert justice and to try to not go to trial or try to possibly spend time in a state hospital. Again, I don't believe that this appellant has brought forth any evidence that would do it. At its strongest, this evidence would trigger informal inquiry. Well, these courts held informal inquiries. As Justice Gabriel said, MHMR, Dr. Womack twice, his own trial counsel, and I can't think of anybody who would be in a better position to report on whether or not the appellant could communicate with his trial counsel other than trial counsel himself. And again, I would just point to appellant's brief where he basically concedes that there is sufficient evidence for this competency finding. That sentence alone, I believe, undermines his whole argument that I don't see how you can argue that a judge acted unreasonably and then in the next breath say, however, there was enough evidence for the judge to have found that. And actually, I believe both of the judges went above and beyond what was required of them in an abundance of caution. I would open the floor to any questions that your honors might have. And then I will concede the rest of my time to the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Davis, do you have rebuttal?
Please, Your Honor.
I think the state and I disagree a little bit on exactly what the proper procedure is here. If I understand the state's argument correctly, then their contention is that neither the magistrate judge nor the trial judge in the district court erred by finding him competent. Well, that is the short circuit of the procedure that we were referring to in our brief. If there's a reason, and you know, that it's kind of right there in front of us, if they felt compelled to make these findings, then there must have been some reason that they felt compelled to do that, hence some basis to move on to a competency trial. But the determination by the magistrate judge and then a few days later the district judge that he is competent is what short circuits the procedure. You cannot go from informal inquiry to competency finding. You have to have the informal inquiry, and if there's some basis there that would suggest incompetency, then that's when you move to the trial, the competency trial that we contend should have been held here and are now asking the court to abate and remand this for. So maybe he is competent, but that's not that determination at that time by that fact finder. And that's why, that's what our complaint is there. In hindsight and in preparing for oral argument, I think that I probably should have fleshed out a couple of the cases out there a little better in terms of behavior standards. The state does cite a couple of cases for the notion that certain kinds of behavior are not the kind that require a hearing or suggest incompetency, but those cases are relatively mild in terms of the facts, being difficult or uncooperative. That describes many clients or defendants in this building. There are a couple of cases, and if the court would allow, I'd submit a letter brief just to bring the cites to the opinion, cites to the court's attention. But Bright v. State out of the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals, and then Durgan v. State out of the Beaumont Court, both involve behavior that is much more like what we have in this case, and in both of those, a competency trial was found necessary.
Counsel, you're more than welcome to submit a letter brief. 5 days enough?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor.
And you'll have 5 days to respond if you would like to.
There are not that many cases out there on this area, but these are two that I think that have behavior and conduct that are really quite similar to what we have in this case. And if the court has a question on whether this behavior was sufficient to trip that truly bizarre standard, then I think the court would benefit from looking at them. Of course, we also would suggest that the notion that Dr. Womack advanced, that these test results suggest the possibility of moderate retardation, also under the law as it is today, would certainly require the hearing as well. With that, if there are no other questions, I will yield back the time I have.
Very well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your argument.